great stuff.
On 558 AM, online, on your smart speaker, and on digital radio. This is Love Sport News.
From the Sky News 11, a woman from London who says she's been wrongly jailed for spying in Iran is now facing more charges. Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe denies accusations of spreading propaganda against the regime. The inquiry into the Grenfell Tower disaster is about to get underway. Chairman Sir Martin Moore-Bick and the Chief Counsel will both make opening remarks. Tributes will then be heard from some of the families of the 72 people who died in the fire in West London nearly a year ago. Nabil Shaker has made a film which will be played to the hearing. He lost six relatives.
They were the most amazing family, and we only have memories now of it, you know? Nothing more than memories and video footage. Something that we have to cherish, and we will always cherish.
There's a new health risk threatening the residents of Hawaii's Big Island following the eruption of a volcano there. Lava streams have reached the ocean and are reacting with seawater to create clouds of steam laced with hydrochloric acid and fine glass particles. Christina Neal from the Hawaiian Volcanoes Observatory says the danger is very real.
The event is unfolding still. Changes are happening daily. And we are trying to emphasize in our messaging that things are still dynamic. People need to pay attention to the information coming out.
Sulfur dioxide gas emissions around the volcano have also increased threefold in recent days. There have been difficulties for some rail commuters this morning after the biggest rewrite of train timetables for decades. Certain services have been cancelled on Great Northern, Thames Link and Southern. The government's been accused of turning a blind eye to the role of London's financial centre plays in laundering the proceeds of Russian corruption. The Commons Foreign Affairs Committee says it helps the Kremlin finance its aggressive foreign policy. Lawrence Fox, who stars in the TV show Lewis, is joining the cast of the historical drama Victoria. Filming's begun on a third series, which features Jenna Coleman as the Queen. That's the latest. I'm Tim Jones.
Love Sport on 558 AM, online and on digital radio. This is Ed Bowsher on Love Sport.
Good morning, this is Love Sport. My name is Ed Bowsher, in the hot seat through till 1pm this afternoon. In a minute, I'll be chatting about some of today's biggest stories, including the royal wedding post-match update, and also the news that Roman Abramovich doesn't have a visa for the UK in the moment, and he doesn't seem to have been able to live here for the last 7 weeks. And loads more good stuff to come. I'm now going to speak to Juliet Foster, the broadcaster and journalist. Good morning. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Ed. How are you?
I'm good, and I'd really like to talk royal wedding with you. And I gather my research has just told me that you are a Republican. Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know why, because obviously we know each other moderately well. We used to work together. For some reason, I would have never had you down as a Republican, but that just shows what do I know. As a Republican, did you watch the wedding anyway?
No.
So, didn't you want just to see Meghan's dress and the nice music and the preacher and all
look,
the rest of it?
Look,
no?
Hang on one second. You okay. And I have worked together.
Yes.
All right? Did I ever walk into that office looking Emmy Campbell sporting Paris? No.
You always look very smart and chic, Juliet.
No, I never did. I was always wearing old trousers and old jeans and shoes and things like this. I'm not into fashion. I mean, look, I wasn't curious about it. I really am not interested in royal weddings and things like that. And I had quite a lot of my own stuff to deal with. So, in fairness, I did see some of the highlights and things. And yeah, it was a lovely day and all that kind of stuff. And I'm really pleased for them because they are a very nice couple. And I genuinely, sincerely wish them well. if it had to be a highlight, I mean, I have to confess that the preacher, I saw some of his preaching, and I thought it was absolutely hilarious, because, I mean, do you ever remember Kenny Everett's video show?
Yes.
And Brotherly Love?
Yes, with the massive
with
hands.
Yeah, with the outsized hands, that's
yes.
right. Yeah, it reminded me a bit like that.
he wasn't a typical British vicar, that is for
no,
sure.
He,
I think
he
we
wasn't,
could...
but you see, that was the beauty of it, because what was so funny was that apparently... he was very tame compared to how he normally is.
Really? Right. He toned it down for us Brits. That is funny.
He toned it down.
That is funny. Well, imagine what he must be like when he's in his church in the US. I tell you the other thing that interests me, I realise you've got loads and loads of African-American preachers who preach in that sort of gospel style. It's a big part of US culture. But that particular priest was a member of the Episcopalian Church, which is the equivalent of our Anglican Church. So I imagine that all those US Episcopalians would be quite sort of uptight and British, but no, far from it. But Meghan Markle, of course, she's of dual cultural heritage. Is that a further symbol of the UK sort of improving race relations? Does that show that the UK is slowly but surely becoming a more tolerant and open society, do you think, Juliet?
That's a really interesting question, but you know, I'm a sort of dyed-in-the-wool cynic, and I don't think so. I think, look, this is a really nice love story, because what I like about it is that she didn't look for him, he looked for her. He could have had the pick of anybody, and I'm talking specifically about the daughters of titled people.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you, and I'm not being horrible here, but I'll bet you that there are probably one or two of those titled families who probably didn't watch it, not because they're Republican, but simply because it's not their daughter that went up the aisle. It was a complete outsider who totally blindsided them. And you know, I really do wish them well, and I think that she's going to have a bit of a struggle on her hands. And the reason why I say this, I'm not trying to doom this, it's that their marriage is going to work, and I'll tell you why. It's going to work because she is one feisty girl. She has a personality.
She sure does.
Okay? And she's tactile. Now, there was a piece in the New York Times a few weeks ago, and they picked up on the fact that she was doing the walkabouts. If you've watched her on the walkabouts, she chats to people. She loves talking. She loves meeting people, and she was hugging them. And, of course, you had these uptight, sniffy courtiers who were taking her aside in private and saying, "We don't do that round here," to which she said, "Hey, I'm American. I hug. It's in my DNA." Okay? And if you're going to get a bit of a struggle, it's with the courtiers. Watch out for them, because some of them are really stuffy and sniffy. They're sycophantic rodents, some of them, and they are a pain in the butt. And we know this because Diana, when she was alive, she talked about them, how some of them were just very intrusive, irritating. But you know what? Meghan is a tough girl, and her husband is a tough guy. She's a feminist, and he's a feminist. And he's not the only male feminist, because Andy Murray's a feminist as well.
And I'm a feminist as well, Juliet. There's three men
Excellent.
Out there who call themselves feminists. So there you go. I talk the talk. Whether I walk the walk, my wife might disagree. But that's the by. But look, we've got to say this, Juliet. You're a Republican. We've got to discuss it briefly. Why are you against having a monarchy in the UK?
Well, I just don't feel comfortable with the idea of it, because I just think, look, we've got such a very divided society, and I just think that they are it's just the idea of privilege. To me, there's a bit of a contradiction. On the one hand, mobility and giving everybody opportunity and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, that's great, but then you've got this level of society where they are. It's the whole rule about social mobility, etc. It doesn't really apply. It's entitlement, and I just find that sits very uncomfortably with me. What I don't like is this sense that if you are a Republican, people assume, well, that's it. You're religion. I don't agree with violence, and I would never advocate getting rid of the royal family in that way. I think that if not in my lifetime, in somebody's lifetime, the monarchy's done very well, it's endured, but it may well be decided, its ultimate fate, it may well be decided by a referendum. Who knows? And if it is decided by a referendum, then maybe the trigger for that could be the Commonwealth, because remember, she's the head of state for the Commonwealth, and there are some Commonwealth countries who've actually questioned that relationship. Why should you be our head of state, notably Australia, when we're on the other side of the world? world.
No, indeed, and I can understand why Australians or Canadians might feel that, or other countries as well. And in fairness, you know, Australia can give up having the Queen, and here in the UK we can carry on having her or her heirs and successors. And I also agree with you, Julia, if the monarchy does go at some point, which it may well do, it will almost certainly done in a peaceful way and done by a referendum. I am a monarchist, but I completely accept that the monarchy can only work if the majority of the British people want it. In fact, actually quite a big majority. You can't have a 52-48 vote in favour of the monarchy.
Exactly.
It wouldn't work.
Because
one of the points about the monarchy is it's supposed to be uniting us. And I think it still is just about pretty much, but we may get to the point, if more and more people start thinking along your lines, Juliet, that it's not uniting us, and then it's kind of pointless, really. But I hope that doesn't happen before I die, because I just have this sort of a emotional attachment, if you like, to it. So I rather like it. But there we go.
I don't. But if it does go, I would want it to happen peacefully. I have to stress that, peacefully and with no loss of dignity.
No, well, I completely agree with you there, obviously. And the thing about social mobility that you touched on there, Juliet, as well, which clearly is a very important issue. We'd all like to see more social mobility. There's a lot more work to be done in this country. I do think it has changed slightly, though. We've become more American. 50 years ago, you'd have the Earl of whatever, you know, and he'd be very sort of powerful and important in society. And I think that's changed to a bit. It's more like, actually, just very rich people who've often made money from their own businesses. They're becoming the sort of dominating thing in society, and they're not allowing poor people to move up. So it's more of an American
style. But then they're intermarrying, or they're marrying into wealthy families.
True.
It's this fusion of new money and old money. The new money wants the dignity of the title. That's the icing on the cake.
True.
So therefore you sort of marry into the old families, and of course they get something out of it because they're getting access to all this money, so it can actually lift them even further and perhaps repair their old houses.
True. That's a very good point, Juliet. A very, very good point indeed. Stick with us, Juliet. I want to ask you about this story about how members of the Tory party may get a Nando's discount card. Stay with us.
Seriously, even Shania Twain loves me. That I could tell you.
Love Sport.
I work for a spokesman said.com. We can help you save money on your home insurance. All you need to do is visit a spokesman said.com and find out if we can find you a better deal.
There is now another way to enjoy Love Sport on your favorite smart speaker. Just say to your Amazon Alexa device, Alexa, enable Love Sport skill. Or just visit the Amazon Alexa app and enable us there. Once you've enabled us, use Open Love Sport to listen to the station that packs a punch. Love Sport, 24/7 through Alexa.
No more plastic straws in England. That really sucks.
Love Sport.
Hi, it's Ed Boucher here. It's 12 minutes past 11, and I am talking about some of today's biggest news stories with Juliet Foster, who, of course, is a freelance broadcaster and journalist. Juliet, let's look at the Tory party. Apparently, they are considering introducing a new discount card for members, and it wouldn't just give you money off at Nando's, it could give you money off at all sorts of other places as well. Do you think this is seriously going to work? Will it get people to join the Tory party, Juliet?
Not if you're a vegetarian, I am.
I'm learning lots of stuff about you today. I had no idea you're a Republican, no idea you're a vegetarian. So they're all very interesting. But
I mean, to me, I have to confess, Ed, when I read that story, I just burst out laughing. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. I can see what they're getting at, but it's like, you're going to have to do better than Nando's, mate.
Yes.
But I mean, look, jokes aside, there was a piece in The Guardian which was written by Ruth Davidson, who is the lobby Scottish Conservatives, and she's actually been touted as a possible leader of the Conservative Party in the future, because she, you know, she's a ballsy woman, she knows what she's about, and so on and so forth. But interestingly enough, in this article, she basically said that there was a survey, and it pointed to the fact that there was a specific group of people, I think they were sort of millennials, sort of 18 to 30 or whatever. And this survey said to them, look, you know, we got the same number. I can't remember the actual statistic, but they actually said, no, we wouldn't want to vote Conservative. So the point about it is that they've got to try to make themselves relevant and attractive to the upcoming generation of voters, because the traditional Conservative voter, or the cliche that we have of the traditional voter, in other words, somebody who's much older, retired, all that sort of stuff, those voters in their 70s and 80s, some of them are dying. So obviously that base of support has to be refreshed, and you need to engage it now, okay? So you can see the strategy that they have in mind and what they're doing. But whether offering discounts on Nando's is the way to do it, I don't really think so. Maybe what they need to do is to actually look at their message, how they're getting it across, passing people in the right way.
I mean, I think if I was a 20-year-old, and, you know, who perhaps had voted for Labour at the last election, I think I'd just see, are you going to give me discounts at Nando's? That's basically pretty patronising, isn't it?
It is very patronising. But, I mean, on the other hand, you might be clever and say, so you want my support, and is Nando's a discount and Nando's your opening hand? No. You're going to have to do a bit better than that. Let's kind of up the gifts here. But I mean, it also smacks of desperation, quite frankly. And to me, is this a clue, stripping aside the humour, is this a clue about the levels of support in the Conservative Party? What is it telling us? They've had to resort to this.
Absolutely. And one very striking figure is, so the Conservatives now have 124,000 members across the UK. Labour has 550,000. So that's pretty much five times the number of members as the Tories. So the Tories really do have problems, as you suggest, Juliet. Not enough youngsters are backing them. They're losing support in the ethnic minority community after the whole Windrush disaster. Mm. They've certainly got problems. And the only thing they're lucky about is they've got Jeremy Corbyn as the opposition leader, who some people will never vote for.
That's what's holding them together at the moment. But you see, this is the second big giveaway or potential giveaway that we've had from the Conservatives. Yes, it's Nando's today, but if you cast your mind back, in fact, I was talking to Kelvin McKenzie, and you had a think tank which was led by David Willetts, who was a former Conservative Party minister, yes. He's now in the House of Lords, and they were offering to give millennials £10,000 when they hit the age of 25, so that they could actually get onto the property ladder. Excuse me, £10,000?
It's not going to make much difference, is it?
Absolutely not.
No. Let's move on to this story about Roman Abramovich, Juliet. So apparently he's not been granted a new UK visa and he's not been in the country since April the 1st. Assuming that's true, we don't know for sure, but assuming this is true, is it the right thing to do, Juliet, to not let this man into the UK?
Well, before I answer that, let me tell you something. Don't bother looking in Yarlswood. You will not find him there.
No, yes, you're right. I shouldn't laugh. It's a very serious good point. You're right.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, look, the thing is, his visa has run out. Now, if he was here, that would make him an illegal immigrant, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are quite a few people who are not in that situation, who have lived here, they were born here, and they were suddenly found themselves being visited by the Home Office.
Sure.
So in that sense, his money has protected him because he's able to stay somewhere. He'll find other bolt holes where he can be until his status is sorted out. But look, his people have said he has put in to have his visa extended and he's the victim of bureaucracy because the whole thing has been held up. On the other hand, if you're cynical, you might say, well, the Home Office is trying to show, look, we are trying to do our job and nobody is the exception to the rule. Even if you are the 6th or is it the 13th richest person in the United Kingdom?
Yeah, 13th richest with £9.3 billion.
Yeah, £9.3 billion. So he's one of the top. He's certainly one of the top 20 or if not top 10 richest people in this country. So yes, even somebody with a pocket of his size can find themselves in trouble getting on the wrong side of the immigration department. On the other hand, I suspect it's not so much about the Home Office trying to show that it's so uber-efficient that it's clamping down on billionaires. I think it's probably more to do with the fact that in the wake of the Skripal poisoning, we had the government saying, look, we're going to clamp down on Russia. This is part of this political tit-for-tat. But also as well, the government has been coming under pressure how can I say this without incriminating myself or you legally? But in terms of clamping down on oligarchs,
yeah.
Okay, amid fears about how they're well ban Abramovich of doing anything illegal. I have to stress that. But it strikes me as a little bit more than coincidence that this is happening at a time when you've got Russian-British relations which are strained, shall we say, following the Skripal poisoning, and also concerns about the City of London, or London specifically, being used as a base for money laundering activities from Russia.
It's not a coincidence at all, Julia. I'm absolutely sure about that. I just think the question is, is it the right way to deal with this issue? And I'm not 100% convinced it is the right way.
And I'm inclined to agree with you because, look, we have to be clear about something, just to put this in context. Russian money has been coming into London over many, many years. It didn't just suddenly happen in the last 5 or 10 years. Go a bit further. Go right back to the 1990s. You will find that it was happening there. And this money is embedded in the financial DNA of this country.
Yeah.
Okay? And we're not talking about money coming into Britain via designer leather suitcases, okay? You can divert it with the flick of a button on a PC. There are banks which are actually taking this money, okay? There are businesses which have Russian stakes, okay? And if you're going to clamp down on this, how are you going to do it in a way that doesn't collapse a company and follow through the chain, that if some of that money is taken out, there are people at the extreme end of that chain who will be impacted. They will lose their jobs. So there's a lot of talk which is going on, and yes, you do have high-profile symbols like Roman Abramovich, because everybody knows who he is. But if you're going to tackle this, it's got to be more than just a symbolic scratch.
Juliet, thank you very much for joining us again. Always, this is Love Sport.
I don't approve of political jokes because I've seen far too many of them get elected.
Love Sport, 558 AM.
Don't miss big at the London Motor Show. Brought to you by motorshowevents.com. This is a celebration of all big vehicles. From big American, the ultimate six-wheel Hummer, one of the biggest off-roaders, to the most spectacular lowrider by Gas Monkey, this is not to be missed. Save 10% today on London Motor Show tickets. Visit motorshowevents.com/lovesport and use promo code BIG2018. The London Motor Show, 17th to the 20th of May at XL London.
Stop paying too much for your energy bills. Brian saved money on his at aspokesmansaid.com. Can you?
I'm Brian from Swaddling Coat, South Derbyshire, and I saved about £400 on my energy bill with a Spokesman Said. The iSpokesman Said website was very easy to use, instructions are quite clear to follow, and the money I saved I put towards a holiday.
aspokesmansaid.com. Compare home energy quotes from the UK's biggest suppliers in just a matter of minutes. To find real people, real savings. Compare, switch and save with aspokesmansaid.com. Fighting for you, saving you money.
Who's going to win the World Cup? Not Italy, that's for sure. Who do you fancy? England? The Germans? 7BestBets offer great welcome deals for new customers. Whether you think you know this summer's big winners, or you want a spin at the roulette table, or you fancy a flutter on the GGs, 7BestBets have got you covered. Enjoy your World Cup with us. 7BestBets.com. Please gamble responsibly. Gamble aware for details.
Digital radio offers great sound quality and more stations than ever before. And we want to make sure that you get Love Sport on your digital radio. Just press the auto tune or auto scan button and Love Sport will appear on your menu. Love Sport on digital radio. A great station for a great city.
This is important. It's soccer, not football.
This is Love Sport.
Good morning, this is Ed Bowsher here on Love Sport. And now let's turn to a serious topic. This week is Dementia Action Week, and there are apparently now 850,000 people in the UK living with dementia. That's expected to rise to over 1 million in just 7 years' time. And British Gas believes that at least 100,000 of its customers in the UK are living alone in their own homes with dementia, living on their own. That is the particularly scary part of it. I'm now going to speak to Steve Crabb from British Gas. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, Ed.
So, yeah, what would you say are some of the challenges that people with dementia face if they're living on their own with dementia?
Well, if we don't know that people with dementia, have the condition, then they may be having to provide their own meter readings to us. And, you know, it's not easy for people who haven't got dementia to get in their hands and knees and climb into a cupboard to read a meter or get through the snails and the spiders to look in the gas cupboard for
no, I hate
for
it.
A meter reading.
I personally find it a complete nightmare. But so I take your point, yeah.
Absolutely. But if we know that customer has got dementia, then we'll put them on our priority services register and we'll send out a meter reader to do the job for them. Or even better, put them on a smart meter And then the smart meter will do the job. So
I'm guessing also, if you're sending out a man to read the meter, sometimes people with dementia can sort of get confused and become fearful, so they wouldn't necessarily find a meter reader coming, being a particular low-stress event, would be my suspicion.
Absolutely, and this again is the reason why smart meters are a godsend, because they do the job automatically, they send through accurate meter readings, so the customer no longer has to worry about bill shockers, as it's in the jargon, of getting a surprisingly high bill, or for the energy company to build up a surplus of credit. So these are a very simple, practical way in which, if we know a customer has dementia, you know, we can provide that additional support. Another way is in customers living with dementia may forget to pay a bill, and for a period of time. If we know that they've got dementia, then we'll put that on that information on their account. We'll put them on something called the Priority Services Register, and that means then that we'll be able to look out for warning signs. So we made a commitment 2 years ago to become a dementia-friendly organisation, and during that time, 21,000 of our people have gone through what's called Dementia Friends, which is a learning package that the Department of Health created that gives you some simple tools and techniques to understand what it means to live with dementia and how we can all help people with dementia to live well for longer. Because it is possible, you know, those figures that you mentioned, but 100,000 British Gas customers are living alone perfectly well and getting on with their lives. It's not a sentence to go into a care home the way it was perceived to be 10 years ago. You know, people do live well and help to, you know, with the right help, they can manage the condition and they can stay safe and warm in their own homes. And we recognise that we've got a part to play in that.
Steve, so if there was someone in my family suffering with dementia, thankfully at the moment that's not the case, but if there was somebody and they're living on, be then to contact British Gas or whoever may be the energy supplier so that we get the message through, would you accept that information from someone who isn't the customer and to make that sort of note to the details you have on that customer?
So one of the things that we did when we decided to become dementia-friendly was actually talk to British Gas customers with dementia and say, look, what can we do differently that can make your lives easier? And one of the things they told us about was power of attorney, which is a very comparatively simple process where somebody with dementia gives a family member, a loved one, the ability to speak on their behalf. And then we can accept that information. And the old system that we had in place was really clunky. Thanks to the input that we had from customers with dementia, we now have a really good process in place that makes it simple for people to talk on behalf of loved ones. You know, we encourage the customers themselves to come forward and let us know if they have dementia so we can provide that additional help. And 10,000 British Gas customers have given us that information that they have dementia in the last 6 months.
And do you share that information really with other companies who are providing services for your customers, the ways to sort of spread the word?
We share the information with other energy companies in order to ensure that in the event of any problems, like, for example, if a builder puts a JCB through a power line and an Ealing goes dark, then the energy networks know where the people are who need emergency help and they can get it as fast as possible. We don't share... We're very conscious of data protection, so we don't share information about sensitive personal issues with other companies. But we do, outside of the networks, but we do collaborate with water companies, with telecom companies, at the level of, you know, best practice. What are the principles that we should all subscribe to? And that led to guidance being published in February of this year. It's published by the Alzheimer's Society, and you can find it on their website. And it's got information there which is as relevant to the man and the woman working on their own in a white van down the street as it is to the largest utilities company on how to support customers living with dementia to help them stay safe and warm in their own homes for as long as possible.
Thanks very much for joining us, Steve. Thank you so much for telling us about this. An important topic. That was Steve Crabb from British Gas. Just coming back to the wedding, just for a minute, I've seen a piece in the Daily Mail this morning by Quentin Letts, who is a very funny and able writer, that's for sure. He sometimes does theatre reviews and he does reviews of what's been happening in the House of Commons. So he's a funny, able writer, but more often than not, he's writing total rubbish. And his actual views are actually total rubbish. And he's done it again. Done it again here in this morning's Mail, where he refers to the Most Reverend Michael Curry, the American bishop who preached at the royal wedding on Saturday. He refers to him as a shouty American preacher, saying that he should put a sock in it. And he's got talking at one point, he refers to the bishop, he says of him, he hollered and boinged up and down on his feet. Never even heard this word, boinged. I don't know what he's on about. I mean, I thought the sermon was great. Fine, maybe some members of the royal family found it a little bit unusual, not what they normally get when they go to church on a Sunday morning, but it made a nice change. Meghan is half, 50% African-American background. It made sense to have an African-American preacher to bring a bit of gospel to the royal wedding. It's now 29 minutes to 12 here on Love Sports. Stay with us.
There's more chance of explaining what the hell tofu is than explaining what goes on in Putin's head, that I can tell you.
Love Sport Breakfast with Ian Stone.
He's been sparring a lot. I know a couple of the guys he's sparred with. Guys like Lucas Brown, Nathan Gorman, Dave Allen, the White Rhino.
The White Rhino.
That is his nickname,
is
yeah.
Is he in danger?
Yes, because he's quite a poor heavyweight.
I'd love a name like that.
Would you?
I don't know. What would you call yourself?
Me? The Scared Jew. Please welcome Ian, the Scared Jew Stone. I'm not sure that would really instill much fear in my opponent.
Weekdays from 6 a.m.
Good morning, my name's Ed Bowsher. You are listening to Love Sport. So today, you may have heard, in quite a few parts of the country, new railway timetables have come into force, and they've coming in with much bigger changes to the timetables than you'd normally expect. So many rail travellers are fed up with the fact that their favourite train, you know, the 6:42 from Hull to Sheffield, has been removed from the timetable, or whatever it may be. But ignoring that, there's another worrying consequence of what is happening today, because we are reading that apparently some rail bosses have told staff not to help disabled passengers board a busy train if that process of getting the disabled passenger on the train will mean that the train leaves the station late. So basically, the rail companies are saying it's more important that the train runs on time than disabled people get a bit of help so they can do their morning or evening journey. To talk about this, I'm now joined on the line by Sue Bott. She's the Deputy Chief Executive of Disability Rights UK. She's had a visual impairment from birth and has been active in the disability movement in the UK for many, many years. She was awarded a CBE in 2014. So good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
You must be pretty fed up when you heard about this story.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, are we going backwards or what? I'm so worried about it. I don't know why any guidance had to be issued at all. I mean, of course railway staff will assist disabled people onto a train. So issuing guidance that says, don't do this if the train's going to be held up, I mean, I just fear that will mean don't offer any help at all,
yes.
Particularly in busy times. And, you know, in this day and age, we disabled people, we want to get to work, put in a day's work, same as anybody else does.
So do you use the trains much yourself, Sue?
Oh, every day.
And your experiences are positive, are they? Do the staff help you if you need help?
Yeah, I mean, the staff are fine, and they're always very helpful. But, you know, I mean, I've got a problem, my usual train, it's been re-timetabled to accommodate Thameslink. This is a southeastern train. So I now have 3 minutes to change trains when I've got to go downstairs and then upstairs.
Where are you changing?
To the next. It's Faversham in Kent.
Okay.
And, you know, being visually impaired, you know, it takes me just a little bit longer.
Sure.
So, you know, most of the time I'm going to miss the train.
And are you coming into London then?
Yeah, yes.
And is the even if you do make that connection, Sue, is your journey going to be longer anyway?
It won't be longer. No, fortunately, it'd be the same length of time. But it's just, you know, it's been re-timetabled. It's to accommodate the Thames Link trains going along the North Kent route. You know, and it's just ridiculous because, as I say, it means, you know, you've got to fly basically from one train onto another to stand any chance.
I mean, the one thing I completely sympathise with you, Sue, if you're not going to be able to make the connection. I mean, the new Thames Link services that are coming in today, sort of expanding Thames Link, are going to be positive for many people. I personally will benefit.
Oh, sure.
But
yeah, I accept that.
Surely. Clearly, we could create a timetable that helps the new Thames Link to run, but also means that people, you can make a connection in Faversham. It's clearly something's gone badly wrong.
Well, I think it has. And I think the timetable needs to be looked at on a national basis.
And in more broad terms, Sue, you said that you normally find rail staff are very helpful. When you're, you know, doing other things in your life, not transport, I don't know, where you're meeting, you need help at various points in your life. Do you find that employees of what business, whatever business you're interacting with, are for the most part very helpful and very good?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, I do. I mean, of course you get, occasionally, you know, you get the awkward person who doesn't seem to want to understand, but I have to say that they're far outweighed by the majority of people who are helpful.
And so even when people aren't helpful, is it down just to a bloody-minded desire not to help people, or are they trying to be helpful but just doing the wrong thing?
Well, sometimes it's doing the wrong thing, but generally it's because people are in too much of a rush to want to help.
Right. Okay, and so you're Deputy Chief Executive of Disability Rights UK. What is that organisation doing?
Oh, okay. Well, so we're a disabled people's organisation. We don't provide any services or anything, so we do a lot of campaigning and policy development and with whoever will work with us, to be honest. I mean, we we want to spread enlightenment about disabled people, and you know, that's what we attempt to do every day.
Sue, thank you very much for joining us this morning. That was Sue Bott. She's the Deputy Chief Executive of Disability Rights UK. In just a few minutes, I'll be finding out what's going on with house prices. Although house prices have just started to fall a tiny bit in London, and they may be about to fall some more, it's a different story in other parts of the UK, in particular in Birmingham and in the wider Midlands region. We are seeing big increases still in house prices. House prices, or asking prices, rose almost 5% in the East Midlands over the last year. This is data that comes from Rightmove, the property sales website. I'll be speaking to Jeremy Leaf. He's in the estate agent. I've spoken to him before on a different radio show. He's very, very on the ball. He really understands this area very well. So do stick with us. This is Love Sport.
Many people are saying listen to 5 Live and they don't know what they're talking about. Stupid, stupid people. Very, very stupid people. Unlike me, I listen to Love Sport.
558 AM. Love Sport.
When looking for the best possible deal for his car insurance, Jim went on thespokesmansaid.com and saved hundreds.
I'm Jim. I'm a radio presenter based in Glasgow. I couldn't believe how expensive the car insurance for our Citroën C4 Picasso was going to be from my existing insurer. I went on A Spokesman Said and saved an incredible £600. Just amazing. Signing up to A Spokesman Said, best thing I could have done.
Find quotes from over 100 leading insurance providers at aspokesmansaid.com. Getting real people, real savings. Compare, switch and save with aspokesmansaid.com.
Digital radio offers great sound quality and more stations than ever before. And we want to make sure that you get Love Sport on your digital radio. Just press the auto tune or auto scan button and Love Sport will appear on your menu. Love Sport on digital radio. A great station for a great city.
Every goal, every game, every minute. With Brentford FC, a football club like no other. Experience live championship football at Griffin Park as a 2018-19 season ticket holder. Early bird prices apply, so book before the 31st of May and save £50. Prices start from £369 for adults and £49 for juniors. Secure your season tickets today at BrentfordFC.com. That's BrentfordFC.com.
Who's going to win the World Cup? Not Italy, that's for sure. Who do you fancy? England? The Germans? 7 Best Bets offer great welcome deals for new customers. Whether you think you know this summer's big winners, or you want a spin at the roulette table, or you fancy a flutter on the GGs, 7 Best Bets have got you covered. Enjoy your World Cup with us. 7bestbets.com. Please gamble responsibly. Visit GamblerWare for details.
More than ever before, we need to discuss what a fanny pack is. I have to tell you, many people are saying this. Many people. It's true.
This is Love Sport.
Hi, it's Ed Boucher here. It's 19 minutes to 12. We are now going to look at property prices. Some new data has come from Rightmove, of course, the big property website, just basically saying that across the UK, asking prices, what people ask for when they put a house on the market, they are still rising slightly. We're seeing a very, very, very slight fall in London, but some areas elsewhere in the UK still doing quite well, as particularly in the Midlands, 4.8% rise over the last year in the East Midlands, 4.3% rise in the West Midlands. I'm now going to speak to Jeremy Leaf. He's an estate agent and he is the former residential chairman of the RICS, which is the Organisation for Chartered Surveyors. So good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Does this data correspond with what your impression has been anyway of a slowing housing market in London, but still quite buoyant in some ways elsewhere?
Pretty much, I'd say. You know, we're on the ground meeting and greeting people every day, and we've been seeing this trend for some time. Certainly, London is not rising as fast. It's almost like the north-south divide in reverse. What we've seen in the past, London, you know, racing away and much faster. Now other parts of the country are picking up.
They're getting their chance, if you like.
Yeah.
I mean, what's slowing things down in London, do you think? Is it Brexit? Is it the tax changes? Increases on stamp duty for very valuable properties? Are they both factors?
Probably all of the above. I mean, that's what we find. That's what people tell us at the sharp end, as it were. They tell us that those are the sort of things which are holding them back. A general confidence shortage. I think that's what happens when people decide to take on debt or not, and if they're not moving, we ask them why not, why they're not making offers, obviously, and those are some of the reasons that are quoted. But of course, these figures are asking prices as opposed to selling prices, so it's a little bit different.
So which is the best data to look at? Is it the land registry data? Is that the most accurate data?
Shall I tell you something? It's actually for people in the business, it's more the transaction data. We're not so bothered about prices booming and busting, and you know, the media, with all due respect, tend to get very excited about prices rising and falling. And obviously, if they are excessively, that's bad news. But people in the industry, responsible people, want to see transactions. And I think the government probably do too. And these figures are showing actually that transactions are down. And you think of how many people can't move or don't move because of that and the impact on the economy.
No, I take your point, but I would also say that it's harmful for our economy that house prices are too high.
Yeah.
Bluntly, that's not good news for our economy. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think the more transactions we're going to have and the more stock that we have available, it's going to keep prices in check, and it's going to mean that more people are likely to come in and out of the market, having an effect on social job and social mobility, all those factors as well. That's definitely better in the longer term.
So you think at least part of the answer is just to build more homes?
It's not just a question of people. It's often cited as just about building more houses. Again, that's a very simplistic response. I think, you know, it is a factor. We don't build enough in the places that people want to live, and we come across, it's not just the figures, it's behind the figures. There's so many people who are perhaps sharing or staying with parents or friends who would love to move, but just can't, because they just can't afford to, or there isn't enough affordable housing, whether that's affordable in terms of buying or social rent. There just isn't enough, particularly at that level.
But you say that's not the whole story. What are other things we can do then to try and bring house prices down?
Well, I think we can bring empty homes back more into use. You know, we all, I'm sure, walking to work, walking to see people, to stations and buses and wherever we're going, we see empty properties, and we often turn to one another. I'm sure, as I see, you know, in lots of parts of the country, empty homes. You think, oh, that would make a nice housing or flat development. Why has it been empty for so long? You know, there are the rules out there. A lot of the problem is enforcement, interpretation, and people just not either getting on with it or not being allowed to get on with it.
I think another part of the problem, and this is not the fault of estate agents or the RICS, but,
oh, careful.
But it's not your fault at all. Absolutely not your fault, this one. But one problem is that our economy and our business is so London-focused, isn't it?
Yep.
And you've got places elsewhere in the country where there aren't so many jobs, if you like, but plenty of very nice houses that many of us would like to live in. And so somehow I think the government have to encourage some activity, economic activity, to move from London. And that kind of approach was very unpopular in the 80s, and Thatcher was very against it. But we need to think in that way again, I think. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. And in fact, the figures bear it out. I mean, your words are perfectly timed, because there we've got a boom in the East and West Midlands. And you think about it, we've got some connections there, and you ask people, you talk to people, and you see it for yourself, and you see HS2 coming there soon, and you see HSBC, you know, relocating. And I think that's really good news, that the focus is turning more to places outside London. It should be more balanced for so long.
I mean, it's...
London has been the focus for attention, where there's plenty of other good places to live and work.
It's great that HSBC is moving staff out there, and I think Deutsche Bank as well. What worries about HS2 is it'll just mean more people will commute from Birmingham into London, so in some ways it won't help. But fine. So you agree with me that it would be good to try and reduce house prices if we can.
Oh, definitely. That we're much more interested in transactions than boom and bust house prices.
Understood. Yeah. But do you think there's any chance that that will actually happen to any significant extent?
Do you know something? The worse it becomes sometimes, the more that something's likely to be done about it. It's a sorry state of affairs, but sadly that is the case. And it's only when really affect. I mean, these figures are quite shocking, and others have come out recently which clearly we follow all the time in terms of transactions, and it must be having an effect on the economy and job mobility in particular, people's ability to take a job, in one part of the country or another, and they just feel that they can't, particularly moving to London or some of the more expensive parts, because they can't take it, because they can't afford it, either to rent or to buy, and that must be a sad state of affairs.
But so you're saying the transaction levels, many more house sales and purchases were going through 5 years ago than they are now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're down there. At that time, we were around 1.6, 1.7 million a year. Now it's hovering around a million or less. You know, they have come right down the numbers of transactions, and that is having a knock-on effect.
That is strange. You would think that if there were those fewer transactions, that would really start to push prices down, but it's not actually doing it as yet.
Well, there's still people. You see, the other factor, of course, in that which we haven't mentioned, is, of course, the level of interest rates. Now, they're at sort of close to 10-year lows, there or thereabouts, and that, of course, is encouraging people to move who can afford, those that can afford to move. And that's another factor. And interest rates are have a huge impact on the availability of finance and to take on debt.
And if interest rates do rise significantly, that could make a difference to the housing market.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not just that, but also other factors like build-to-rent, which has been touted as a possible solution for affordable accommodation. If interest rates start going up, that is not going to make that model as attractive to investors, and it also may push some people, if prices soften, into buying rather than renting. So there's quite a balance going on there, which is making a difference. But yeah, governments, as you said, in response to your earlier point, definitely can make a difference.
I mean, I can see that you may not have as many buyers as usual because there isn't the confidence out there and people are worried about interest rate rises.
Yeah.
But I'd have thought, from looking at it from a seller's perspective, you'd have lots of sellers banging on your door saying, you know, we want to sell now, trade down now, cash in before house prices start to fall. But you're not seeing that, as far as I can tell.
No, what we're actually seeing is more property coming on the market, and other people and buyers who are out there, then viewings are up quite a bit. But it's the ability to commit. Commitment levels are not so strong. People are nervous. They're thinking, well, if I'm agreeing a price today, will it be lower in a few months' time? Or am I there or thereabouts? What is it going to be like at that time? And other people, particularly in London or places where prices have gone up in the past, where they have a lot of equity in their property, they find it difficult. A lot of people find it difficult to come to terms with the new market levels.
Yeah.
So if they've received an offer which is clearly market level based on the number of viewings, the time on the market, the way it's been presented, they might say, oh, my place is worth a lot more than that. I'm not accepting that offer. But those that are actually concentrating on the difference between what they're receiving and what they're buying, because, of course, 4 out of 5 sellers are buyers, those are the people that are moving on and getting on with their lives and, okay, maybe not getting what they wanted, but at least they're moving on to what they want to do, up or downsizing.
Some sellers have got to be realistic now. They perhaps
very
have missed
much so.
The top of the market. Jeremy, thank you so much for talking to us. That was Jeremy Leaf, former residential chairman at the RICS, and it's now 9:09 on Love Sport.
Lego, the strongest brand in the UK. I think I'm going to have to build my wall with Lego now.
Love Sport.
I work for a spokesman said.com. We can help you save money on your home insurance. All you need to do is visit a spokesman said.com and find out if we can find you a better deal.
Got something to get off your chest that doesn't require medical assistance?
Then calling is for you.
Whether it was a dodgy tackle, poor game management, or the simple fact that the referees are
should have gone to Specsavers.
We want to hear about it.
The action.
The reaction.
And
the overreactions. On London's biggest games, every Saturday from 5:15. The London on your London station.
Love Sport.
England World Cup team. Pathetic. No Americans whatsoever. Sad.
This is Love Sport.
Hello, it's Ed Bauscher here on Love Sport. Let's now turn to obesity, because Britain is starting to overtake the US in obesity rates, particularly when we look at children. Apparently, 18.5% of US children from the ages of 9 to 11 are obese. The figure for English children, these are England figures, English children in their final year of primary school, 20% obese. So 20% obese here in England, 18.5% obese in the US. I'm joined on the line now by Helen Money. She is a nutritionist. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning.
Does this sort of correspond with your perception? Do you think, roughly speaking, a fifth of primary school kids are obese now?
Yes, certainly. We do see different distributions through the country, but that they are the figures children are weighed in school when they enter school and in their final year of primary school. And this is what the statistics are saying. But then, as I say, within different parts of the country, we see the obesity rates higher or lower, with obesity rates being particularly high in the more deprived areas.
And how do we define obesity? Fairly simply, but how do we define it?
It's different between an adult and a child. With an adult, it will be a BMI above
body
30.
Mass index.
Sorry, body mass index. With children, it's measured slightly different, and it's if they're within the top percent of the weight recommendation for the weight of a child their age. So it's slightly more complicated in the child. And also, obviously, you have to take into account that children are different heights, so they would weigh different amounts at different ages.
Okay. So you're seeing this happening, and you're saying the obesity tends to be higher in disadvantaged areas than in more prosperous areas.
It does, yes. The research is certainly suggesting and showing.
And what do you think is causing it then? Is it diets, basically, and is it more disadvantaged people buying more rubbishy food, sadly?
It's exactly that, yes. Weight is calories in versus calories out, so we need to look at how we can reduce the calories in and increase the calories out. And what we see in the more deprived areas is what's often referred to as food deserts, where the food available tends to be less healthy. So the local corner shop, which is more likely, again, if you're in a deprived area, you might not have a car to be able to drive to a big supermarket. And the shops within the circumference of the more deprived areas tend to stock less healthy food, like fruit and vegetables.
Okay, but here's the thing, Helen. So I take what you've just said, but I think we can also agree that rich or poor, kids tend to like chips and they're not so keen on spinach. They like ice cream. They're not so keen on fruits. What can you do to encourage kids to eat in a more healthy way?
You have to convince them that they want to do it. As you know, I don't know whether you've got children. But
I don't, actually, no.
Anyone listening will know that it's quite hard to get a child to do something it doesn't want to do. So it is working with them and making them make the decision that they want to eat healthy foods, which would be very much through education. So maybe within schools, there being a bit more input into the education for children to know what foods will support their well-being and make them better at the things they enjoy doing and the foods that are going to be detrimental to health. And then getting them cooking, I think that's a huge thing that has, again, started to improve again in the UK. But there was certainly a lull for a decade of the amount of cooking and cookery skills that got taught in the class.
Oh, right.
And also getting children to taste food as well, that's a huge thing, going back to some of the more deprived areas where there might not be so many fruit and vegetables available to them readily. To get a child to eat something that they've never tasted is quite difficult.
So I guess school meals can play a role there, but you need to encourage the kids to sign up for school meals rather than bringing a packed lunch or whatever it may be. Helen, thank you so much. I wish we could have spoken to you for longer. Interesting stuff here. That was Helen Money, nutritionist, talking about these very sad stats that basically it seems that British kids are more overweight than American kids, which I wouldn't have expected. And I guess we talked about the diet, the nutrition side of it. Of course, the exercise side of it is crucial as well, and it still makes me fume to think about the way that schools have sold off some of their playing fields for a branch of Tesco's or whatever it may be. How short-sighted was that? It's 3 minutes to 12 here on Love Sport.
It's nearly time for the news, real news, unless I'm in any of the stories, in which case it's probably fake news.
Love Sport.
This is Lionel, another very happy person who saved themselves money at a spokesman said.com.
I'm Lionel from Peacehaven. I took note of what the spokesman said and I saved £484 per year on my energy. I found a spokesman said was so easy to follow and it saved me £484 on my energy, and I would recommend everybody does the same.
A spokesman said.com. Getting real people, real savings. Compare home energy quotes from the UK's biggest suppliers to find out if you can save money. Compare, switch and save with a spokesman said.com. Fighting for you, saving you money.
If you're in business, I bet you hate wasting money. We Do Taxi Tops can help you achieve minimum wastage on your advertising costs and maximum exposure. Our revolutionary taxi tops can target your potential customers in the right place at the right time, so your message has the greatest potential for making an impact. We Do Taxi Tops. Visit WEDOOH.com. We Do, the smarter, quicker way of advertising in London, supporting London businesses of all sizes.
You could make the main dealer's day by paying over the odds.
Or you could go to Big Motoring World and save a fortune on up to 2,000 pre-owned BMWs, Mercedes, Audis and VWs in stock. Then with the money you save, put a smile on your face with a cheeky weekend away for two. Give yourself a break at Big Motoring World, just minutes from the M25. See bigmotoringworld.co.uk.
Love Sport Breakfast with Ian Stone. The perfect comedy breakfast sandwich. Bringing home the bacon with all the sports, the biggest news and a fair amount of egg on faces. You like it saucy? There'll be something for you. Love Sport Breakfast with Ian Stone. Weekdays from 6am on Love Sport.
Good morning, it's Ed Bauscher here on Love Sport, doing my morning show through till 1pm this afternoon. After the news, we're going to be talking about emojis. Apparently, some teachers are now using emojis in the classroom to teach things like French, using a duck emoji to help them learn the French word canard. We'll be finding out if that makes sense or it's just teachers trying to get down with the kids and not actually helping them learn anything more. We'll also be speaking to Christian Wall, who is a massive railways expert. Nobody knows more about the railways more than him, and he'll be telling us about the new timetables coming in today, which of course caused chaos across many parts of Britain.
On 558 AM, online, on your smart speaker and on digital radio, this is Love Sport News.
From the Sky News Centre at midday, a 72-second silence has been held for all the victims of the Grenfell Tower fire as the inquiry begins in West London. The first to address the hearing was Marcio Gomez, whose unborn son Logan was the disaster's youngest victim.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, do you know how loved you are? This was on my son's nursery wall, even though he wasn't born at that time. But everything was ready for his arrival.
For the next 2 weeks, the families of those who died in the fire will be paying tribute with statements and videos. The inquiry chair, Sir Martin Moore-Bick, says hearing from relatives is an integral part of evidence into the tragedy.
They will remind us of its fundamental purpose and the reason why it is so important that the truth be laid bare. Only by achieving that goal can we ensure justice for the living and a lasting tribute to the dead.
In other news, a British woman is facing more charges in Iran despite claiming she's been wrongly imprisoned in the country. Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe denies accusations of spreading propaganda against the regime. All charges against Barclays over its emergency fundraising from Qatar during the financial crisis have been dropped. The Serious Fraud Office accused the bank of conspiring to commit fraud by false representation. Dozens of rail routes have been disrupted with delays and cancellations following a major shake-up of timetables. Northern scrapped one in seven services, blaming a shortage of drivers, and the operator running Southern, Thameslink and Great Northern also suffered problems. Despite scrapping thousands of flights in a blunder over pilot rotors, Ryanair has posted record annual profits. They climbed 10% in the year to the end of March after passenger numbers rose. And Ed Sheeran has won four prizes at this year's Billboard Music Awards. The British singer took Top Artist, while Taylor Swift won Top Female in Las Vegas. That's the latest. I'm Tim Jones.
Love Sport on 558 AM, online and on digital radio. This is Ed Bauscher on Love Sport.
Good afternoon, this is Ed Bauscher on the station that packs a punch, Love Sport, which you can hear on 558am, online, on digital radio, and on your Alexa smart speaker. And this is a show where we tend not to do too much sport. We focus on what's in the news, we chat about it, bit of politics, bit of business, and we'd love to hear your views as well. If you ever disagree with something you've heard on this show, let us know at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. But we're now going to look at that story I mentioned before, the news of teachers using emojis in the classroom. Apparently they can help pupils analyse a Shakespeare play or learn words to expand their French vocabulary. I'm not 100% convinced that this is going to work, but then I barely use emojis. In my own life, I'm 50 years old. Maybe I'm an old git who doesn't understand how to bring subjects alive for today's kids. I'm going to speak now to Richard Dunk. He is a lecturer in education at Manchester Metropolitan University. Good morning, Richard. Oh, good afternoon, hello, I should say. Sorry.
Afternoon it is, yeah.
Afternoon it is. Thank you for joining us. Tell us a bit more, before we get on to whether this is the right or the wrong thing to do, can you just tell us a bit more about how teachers are using emojis so we understand a bit better about what we're talking about here?
Okay, so if we just take the example of Shakespearean text, obviously it can be quite dense, quite difficult to understand at times. So for students who might not have English as their first language, or students whose academic history means that they've struggled with engaging with Shakespearean text previously, just the introduction of this idea of emojis that gives them a visual symbol of what the meaning of the text might be, what the characters might be thinking, or how they might be communicating it in a way that's a little bit more accessible for the students.
But how does it work? Is the emoji in the text that they're reading, or does it go up on a screen in the classroom? What happens?
Well, it depends on the teaching methods that are being used, but really it's more likely that the students would be asked to read the text, or the teacher would read the text, and the students might be asked to summarize it or put it into modern language, and through doing that, they might put some emojis in as well. You know, so rather than a conversation that was happening between two characters in the script, they might summarize it as an exchange of tweets or text messages or something.
So do you think it works? Is this a useful way to use emojis? Does it help teachers teach?
I think absolutely, yeah. There's no... any kind of criticism... It comes from a place of, if I might say, it sounds a bit like a snobbery against these things. It's not in any way, shape or form dumbing down the learning that'll be going on there. You know, students are still going to have to use proper English in their exams and in their essays. They are still going to have to understand and quote the text as it is presented originally, but just the process of learning and comprehension that goes along can be supported by embedding these new ways of communication in the lessons.
But isn't there a danger, Richard? Let's say I was a teacher. I'm 50 years old. I'm a teacher. I've got plenty of grey hair. Isn't there a danger if I try and use emojis in the classroom, I just look like a dad who's trying to be cool and missing, and it doesn't really work. The kids won't take it seriously.
I think you might be absolutely right there, yes. And there's definitely a cultural element to emoji use that you have to deal quite sensitively with. I mean, there are some symbols in that kind of lexicon that have got dual meanings. You know, if I was teaching a lesson on food technology and put an aubergine emoji in, that would mean something very different to the students than I might have intended.
Are we allowed to tell us what it does mean to students on the radio, or is it a little bit crude?
Almost certainly. I'm sure you can imagine that there's parts of a man's anatomy that may on occasion be aubergine.
Okay, fine, we'll move on. Lovely.
but it's this idea that there's a cultural link that the teachers might not be fully aware of that mean that you do have to be careful, or one of the reasons that you do have to be careful. People aren't advocating for a dumbing down or a change of teaching methods to kind of get down with the kids. That's not the case at all. But if we can use these tools to make difficult concepts more accessible to pupils in schools, then that's obviously a good thing.
I was chatting to a parent actually just a few weeks ago, and she's a very, very bright, able woman, and she was complaining she felt education hadn't changed enough, that you walked in the classrooms and they didn't really look any different from what they looked like 30 years ago when she was in school. Maybe there's a bit of technology being used, but there should be a lot more changes in both in how things are taught, but even perhaps the things that we are taught about as well. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's two aspects that you've mentioned there. The first would be what's going on in classrooms. I think kind of from a surface glance at things, you've still got students sitting at tables, you've still got a teacher standing at the front, and you've still got, you know, textbooks and pens and that sort of thing going on. But really, if you spend a little bit more time in classrooms, you will see that there is an undercurrent of technology that's embedded in there. You know, it's not unusual to have stop-motion animations being created or frequently used mobile phone apps to support learning. And this is something that is ongoing in teaching at the minute. And it's certainly something that's there, but perhaps we're not celebrating the successes of teachers with technology could do.
And what about the content? What we're actually being talked about? Do the children of today, the future citizens of the 21st century, need to know about when II was King of England? You know, do they need to know what dates they were? I know what the dates were. Hasn't really done me much good either. 1685 to 1688. In case anyone doesn't believe me, that's pretty useless information, isn't it, Richard?
Well, it depends. It's not useless if you're a historian. But I think the point is that the government fairly recently changed the curriculum, you know, to make it more about learning of facts and learning of this it's this rote learning, traditional, very traditional sort of knowledge. And it has produced something of a conflict in education because the value of this over a development of skills and a development of critical thinking. There is a little bit of a tension there, but really, I think it would be silly to dismiss this memorization and this background knowledge is useless, because obviously you need a general grounding in this sort of thing is going to make a more rounded citizen, I think.
And I guess the other thing is, you want kids to learn critical thinking. You need them to learn how to argue both orally, but also when they're writing. And you need to have some facts, I guess, in your brain to support your arguments, don't you? So it's actually part of learning the process of how to argue or debate. Isn't that right, Richard?
This is true, and this is becoming an increasingly important skill in a world of fake news and alternative facts. It's becoming increasingly important that although we've got access to a lot of information at our fingertips through the internet, through mobile phones, that pupils in school are being given this skill set that allows them to critically interpret what's being given and find their path through this disinformation that gets shared around more widely.
Richard, thank you for joining us. Interesting stuff, interesting topic. That was Richard Dunk, lecturer in education at Manchester Metropolitan University. Stay around. We're going to be talking about the massive railway chaos we've had today as a new timetable's introduced. I'll be speaking to Christian Wolmar, transport expert, in just a minute on Love Sport.
Oh, shit. Kim Jong-un is turning heel and becoming a madman again.
Love Sport.
I work for a spokesman said.com. We can help you save money on your home insurance. All you need to do is visit a spokesman said.com and find out if we can find you a better deal.
Digital radio offers great sound quality and more stations than ever before.
And we want to make sure that you get Love Sport on your digital radio.
Just press the auto tune or auto scan button
and Love Sport will appear on your menu. Love Sport on digital radio.
I'm coming, UK. Just like Stormy Daniels, I'm coming.
Love Sport, 5:58 a.m.
Hello, it's Ed Bauscher here on Love Sport through till 1 o'clock. I'm now going to speak to Christian Wolmar. He's a transport expert because millions of rail passengers across Britain are apparently facing travel chaos after the new train timetable came in today. It's the biggest train timetable change in decades, apparently, and the things have not gone well. Good afternoon, Christian.
Hi there.
So, and thank you for joining me again on Love Sport. So just firstly, why is this timetable change so massive? Why do we need such a big change today?
Well, that's because they're putting more trains through the central section of Thameslink, which runs from St Pancras through to Blackfriars London Bridge. And they want as many as 24 trains an hour to go through there eventually. That gives a lot more capacity and a lot more potential for all sorts of new routes. And therefore, they had to rejig the whole timetable system, really, for most of the sort of commuting on that side of London, the southeastern and north of the river and south of the river.
I stand to benefit from this new Thameslink. I live in Finsbury Park, so if all goes well, I'll have direct trains to Brighton and Gatwick, and so I'm happy. I'm all right, Jack. But what I don't understand is, if you've got this extra capacity, you can run more trains. That sounds great, but why does it mean that people living in various parts of Hertfordshire or Bedfordshire suddenly find that their favourite commuter train has been cancelled? Capacity. Why do you need to cancel trains?
It's that old thing of, you know, butterfly wings fluttering in Cornwall and affecting, you know, the weather in Yorkshire or whatever.
Right. Okay.
There is a knock on it. The rail network is a system. Right, and it's interconnected. You know, all lines are connected to all other lines at some stage. So, you know, if you change trains coming in from Peterborough, you will also probably need to change the train timetable for trains coming in from Cambridge. And if they go through to, say, Horsham and
Brighton,
Canterbury and the like, you'll then need to change them south of the river as well. So it is because it's so interconnected that when you make a massive change, like on this, you know, one line that goes through central London, it has enormous knock-on effects. So one does have, and I'm often critical of train companies, but I do have a lot of sympathy with them in trying to do this.
Do you think these timetable changes, once things are bedded down, are they creating more winners than losers, if you like?
Absolutely. Although they have used it to sort of knock out kind of high frequencies in some relatively little used stations and replace them with, you know, more frequency in some bigger stations, and also faster journey times because you stop less. So, you know, there will be some losers, but just by the way that it's been designed, there will be more winners because that's the whole point of it.
Now, so we've got this issue that about the timetable itself and whether it's making things better or worse. You've also got the issue today of this timetable being implemented. And I guess inevitably it's not been implemented 100% successfully. So you had people suffering today and possibly tomorrow and the day after. I mean, is that kind of chaos inevitable? Could we have done a better job implementing this new timetable?
Well, I'm sure they could have done something of a better job. There do seem to be some, you know, rather inexcusable problems. They need to put in lots more contingency. I think that's always the problem. You need to have spare drivers hanging around in various places so that, you know, if one train that gets cancelled with some drivers on it that are heading for another train, you might have some spare people around. You might even have some spare trains hanging around. I know that Crossrail, for example, when that comes on, which, you know, will create similar problems, will have actually spare trains hanging around. And, you know, maybe they've tried to do too much, although they are phasing in these changes, but maybe they've tried to do too much in one go. But, you know, either way, there's huge complexities. And the problem is that if you get one train delayed and it's going into this central funnel tunnel through central London, it then has a knock-on effect. You know, do you let the other train that was scheduled to go through first, or do you then make it wait, and then again you have kind of a knock-on effect? So, you know, it needs to be tested, and the only way to test it really is in practice rather than on a computer simulator, because you have all the different variations of how many people get on a train, that takes time to clear, and so on.
Now, Christian, you mentioned that the plan is that this new north-south route should have up to 24 trains per hour going through. We haven't got to that number yet. Realistically, do you think we'll ever get to that number, that many trains?
Yes, they should do, yes. No, absolutely. I mean, that's what is planned, and they are scheduling that, and that kind of makes the whole program worthwhile. It cost $7 billion to improve Thames Link, and it was supposed to be done by 2000. It used to be called Thames Link 2000.
I remember. Yes,
it's now Thames Link 2018.
You have to laugh, really, don't you?
I'm afraid, rather than crying. Yes,
exactly. On a sadder note, we also were running a story earlier today, this morning on the show. There are reports that some rail bosses are telling staff that you shouldn't help a disabled person onto a train if that means that a train will depart the station late. I assume if that has happened, it's because they are so worried about getting enough trains going through these new routes. But it sounds like a big own goal anyway, if it is true.
Yes, I mean that probably is some advice from some person, you know, fairly low down the management scale that didn't quite realise what they were trying to say.
Fair enough.
Misspoken, I think, is the expression we use these days.
Indeed. All right. Well, that's fair enough. We'll leave that at one other point. You mentioned Crossrail coming on stream. Is it still December 2018? Is that when it starts?
Yes, I had to be a book about this, bit of self-advertisement there.
Absolutely, why not?
And they're promising me still that the tunnels will open in December 2000. They're opening in phases, so the tunnels are due to open in 2018, but there still won't be a through service from Reading through to Shenfield until next year. But they are saying that they are on schedule to do this.
And this
fingers crossed, though. I'm not entirely sure that this will happen.
Yes, indeed. I will join you on that. Cross my fingers. So you said a couple of minutes ago, potentially Crossrail might cause similar disturbance to what we've seen today. And that's because Crossrail is linking up with pre-existing railway lines from Reading and Shenfield.
That's right. And again, with these even freight trains on the western side and on the eastern side, they can cause particular problems and so on. So we might be doing all this over again in 6 months' time.
Well, let's just hope the pain will be worth it. And I'm sure anyone who's listening in a smaller station who's had their favourite train cancelled, they are still going to be very fed up and they don't care about other people benefiting. So, but what can you do? Christian, thank you very much for joining us. That was Christian Walmore, train expert, writing a book on Crossrail. I'll definitely want to read that when it comes out. After the break, we're going to be finding out what's been happening in the markets today with Helen Thomas. So stick around.
Yeah, go soccer ball. I love soccer ball, truly do. Yep. Go the Brits.
Love sport.
Can you save money on your car insurance? Chris did, with a little help from a spokesman said.com. Getting real people, real savings.
I'm Chris from Leicestershire, a truck driver. I went on a spokesman said, which was very easy to use for an old git like myself. And the £300 savings enabled me to take my granddaughter to Pontins on holiday.
Find quotes from over 100 leading insurance providers at aspokesmansaid.com. Real people, real savings. Compare, switch and save with aspokesmansaid.com. Fighting for you, saving you money.
Imagine what it's like to be a road worker on a motorway. Please drive carefully through roadworks.
Hi, I'm Len Goodman, and you're listening to my radio show 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Love Len Goodman has arrived on your favourite smart speaker. Listen to the best easy listening music ever made 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Hosted by Len Goodman. Just say to your Amazon Alexa device, Alexa, enable Love Len Goodman skill. Or just visit the Amazon Alexa app and enable there. Once enabled, use Open Love Len Goodman to listen.
Who's going to win the World Cup? Not Italy, that's for sure. Who do you fancy? England? The Germans? 7 Best Bets offer great welcome deals for new customers. Whether you think you know this summer's big winners, or you want a spin at the roulette table, or you fancy a flutter on the GGs, 7 Best Bets have got you covered. Enjoy your World Cup with us. 7bestbets.com. Please gamble responsibly. Visit GamblerWare for details.
You could visit 10, 20, 50, 100 car dealers. Or just visit Car Giant with giant choice and giant savings. Car
Giant. Most people don't know this, but Chelsea is huge. Her dad, Bill, has some issues, but Chelsea is huge.
5:58 a.m. Love Sport.
Good afternoon, Ed Bauscher here on Love Sport. It's time now to find out what's been happening in the world of money today. And I've got Helen Thomas from Blonde Money on the phone with me now. Hello, Helen.
Hello there.
Thanks for coming on the show again. I was speaking to Helen at 11:30 p.m. on Friday night on my late night show. So she's very, very kind to come on again so shortly after that. Thank you, Helen. Did you have a nice line on Saturday morning at least?
Exactly, yes. Well, until we had to get ready for the wedding, didn't we? And the World Cup, and the FA Cup, sorry.
Well, I fell asleep so late, I actually slept through the beginning of the wedding. I didn't really, I thought the wedding was later. And I was
well,
sort of,
it was all very strange, wasn't it?
It was.
Very odd. And then I don't quite get why the FA Cup was pushed so far back, but I'm sure you'll know on your radio station exactly why that was.
I think that's been happening for a few years now. I think that's driven by the TV companies. It's nothing to do with the Royal Wedding. But I agree, it's not how it used to be. The 3 o'clock FA Cup, and to tell you, we'll be talking about it all morning. It used to be a much bigger deal.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's move on from that. I want to kick off actually, Helen, with markets this morning, because I see the FTSE 100 is up 52 points at 7831. I think that's a new record, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, absolutely great start to the week, and yeah, it's been building up for a few weeks now. And yeah, it looks it's nice to have something positive to talk about on a Monday.
Indeed, and why do you think people are staying positive when you've got all Brexit on the agenda? Corbyn might be Prime Minister, which markets wouldn't normally like. Look, shares just look expensive when you analyse them on many cases. Why do markets carry on going up?
Well, we're all a big globalised world now, it has to be said. Now, but partly the reason why all these markets are so tied to one another is just the structure of markets these days, the way that people go around hedging their risks through various computer systems means that the fact that China and the US have agreed a truce on their trade deal just sort of seems to have lifted everybody's spirits, and it kind of means that quite a lot of the time these automated systems say if that's going up then this must go up, and it all goes up at once. Of course it means it can all come down at once, but on a positive note it's all going up at once.
So it's all driven by computers and algorithms. They're taking over the world. Who knows what will happen? Okay.
Yes, I shouldn't be too down on them, should I? But yes, they do tend to have a habit of kind of copying one another.
They do. And it is a serious point. It is scary. It means the ups may go higher and the downs may go lower as a result. That's the scary side of it, isn't it?
It is indeed. Absolutely. But I suppose we'll enjoy the up for now. It probably means we've got a little bit more to go.
Indeed. Let's move on to Russian money. Obviously, Abramovich today apparently hasn't had his UK visa renewed. Mm. And at the same time, the Commons Foreign Affairs Committee is saying that the UK is turning a blind eye to Russia's dirty money, and that's putting a national security at risk. I think it's definitely true, isn't it, Helen, that the city has made a lot of money from Russian money, Russian oil money, basically leaving Moscow and coming to London because the oligarchs want a safe home for their cash. That has boosted London in recent years, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly, absolutely. And, you know, the FTSE, as we often talk about it, when we talk every week about how it's getting on, and I've just said there, it is a globalised world. Well, the FTSE stock market, the FTSE 100, has tended to be quite receptive to Russian companies that want to list there. So in a way, that sort of ties London even more to business interests in Russia.
So what should we be doing? Should we be saying Skripal, attempted murder, some of the oligarchs are crooks, we need to clamp down on this, sort this out? Or should we be saying, actually, if we try and clamp down, the London economy will be... We're a London radio station, so we can focus on London. The London economy will be damaged. We shouldn't do that. It's too big a cost. We should carry on being nice to the oligarchs. What do you think, Helen?
Well, personally, I don't think anyone needs to be that nice to people who have, got billions lurking in their bank accounts. You know, I think they're probably happy enough. They don't need the rest of us to be nice to them. Having said that, it's no doubt that they do contribute something to London's economy. But I like to be optimistic about London, and I think that over the centuries we have been a centre for trading globally, and it didn't matter who was on the up, you know, whether it was Italy in the 15th century to being Russia and China today. I think it'll tend to be the case that even if we do clamp down on Russia, there will be other wealthy individuals who will still see London as a wonderful cosmopolitan place to live and invest and potentially want to live and send their children to schools here and all the rest of it. You know, we have I kind of think brand Britain is very strong internationally, despite Brexit. Well, certainly brand London is. As you say, we can say that on this radio.
Exactly.
I think we should probably just say, are we really keen on how and what they're doing, you know, given what's happened with Skripal? Doesn't quite seem to chime with where the British government wants to be in its relations to Russia, does it?
No, it doesn't. All right, let's move on to Ryanair. They've announced their annual results. Profits are soaring, but apparently they're not so optimistic about the year ahead. So can you tell us a bit more on that, Helen?
That's right. Absolutely. Record profits. They're doing brilliantly with extra charges. As
they love the extra charges, don't they?
They do. Something like a quarter of their revenue comes from all these baggage extras and, you know, reserved seating and all the rest of it. And, you know, fair play to Michael Leary. He has tried to listen to the concerns about people being treated like cats. People seem to... They're still on Ryanair. But they are sounding cautious about the future because of costs. There's been quite a lot of issues within a lot of the airline industry about pilots' pay, about cabin crew pay, about their rotas and things like this. So, you know, Ryanair think that it's going to cost more in the future just to keep the planes going. And, of course, the oil price is going up, so, you know, that has an impact. But I would say Ryanair does have a history of sounding gloomy about the future just in time to surprise everybody with wonderful results. Quite cleverly, I think they realise that that gives their share price a bit of extra juice on the days they announce it. So I wouldn't be too concerned about this gloomy outlook about costs and prices. I think it's just a bit of expectations management.
Well, I think the market agrees with you, Helen, as the shares are up about 4% today, so they are focusing on what's been happening and not quite believing the gloomy forecasts from the airline. Did you ever see a spoof documentary about Heathrow called Come Fly With Me?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember? There was a brilliant bit. They had a sort of spoof Ryanair Irish airline. The bit that still makes me giggle is that if the plane had crashed, you would pay a fee before you could get the life jacket, which I thought was really, really good. Thankfully, Ryanair haven't done that yet.
No.
But we wouldn't surprise me.
No, bless them. Bless them, I know.
Bless them, bless them. Helen, stay with me. I want to talk to you about the new MOT tests and also about the increasing popularity of banking apps, all here on Love Sport.
London hospitals, a war zone, just like my rear end after spicy food.
Love Sport Breakfast with Ian Stone.
Right. You've had sex outside. I'm just asking. You've had sex outside. It's not comfortable. No. It isn't. On a beach is the worst.
You know, you put what? Up one of those barriers for a change, did you? Or did you just go for it?
No. It's a family beach. It's not just that. Kids, look away. Mummy and daddy are going to have some mummy and daddy time. No, of course it was private. Good Lord, what do you make of me?
I thought you might put up one of those barriers.
A windbreak.
Yeah, windbreak.
Stick out the windbreak, love. We're going to do it.
Weekdays from 6 a.m.
Ed Boucher here. It's 12:30. I am talking matters money with Helen Thomas from the Blonde Money website. Let's talk about the new MOT tests, Helen, coming into force on Sunday. New categories, dangerous, major and minor. And apparently, I guess if you've got a minor fault, you can drive your car as long as you promise to fix it very promptly. Are you a driver, Helen?
I am indeed. I've currently got a decision coming up as to whether to stick with my Audi A1 or go for a Golf.
Oh, well, that sounds very nice. Very nice choice to have, if I may say.
Yeah, isn't it? I'm lucky, I have to say. I'm doing one of those monthly purchase scheme thingies, you know, which we'll see how that pans out. But yes, I am a driver. I love driving, and I get sick of people trying to clobber the drivers.
I'll come back to that in a second, but just on, you mentioned those monthly driver car purchase plans. Mm. My wife and I, we went to a garage thinking about buying a car a year ago. We were in the fortunate position that we had enough cash just to be a cash buyer. Mm. And let me tell you, go to a garage and you say, I want to buy a car with cash. They do not like it. They do not like it one bit. How many times they keep telling you about the amazing car purchase plan? It does suggest that these purchase plans are making quite a lot of money for someone.
Yeah. But they are. That's definitely where they make their money.
Indeed. It's not good. So I think you should hang on to your current car, Helen, and not bother with a new one and a fancy car purchase plan, because think of the money you'll waste on interest. Yeah. Do as Uncle Ed tells you. But anyway, leaving that aside, going back to the MOT test, you say you're fed up with drivers being clobbered, and you feel this is another example of that, do you?
I feel like it will be used that way. I mean, it might, once it's bedded in, hopefully it will be sensible, but it's quite complicated, all these different levels to the MOT, and it always seems to me that that means that the onus lands on the driver, because as you say, the you can still drive it if you've got one of these minor issues, but you have to, you know, repair it as soon as possible. Who's going to police that, if you know what I mean? And how is it going to end up being all the onus on the driver to sort it out? And it just feels like when you get these slightly greyer areas, I mean, it feels like you get grey areas with this. I know they're trying to make it clearer, but it feels like, at least to begin with, it's going to be more complicated.
It does.
Which, Yeah, won't help anybody. I think we all hold our breath when it goes for the MOT, don't we?
We do. I guess the plus sign is it may mean that our cars are safer and less likely to break down. I guess that's the positive side.
You're right. And yes, we shouldn't be, you know, I'm sure we've all seen those cars with dodgy indicators and, you know, not the right brake lights and all the other things you're not supposed to drive with. And we've seen them on the road. So
yes.
Better that they're off the road getting sorted out.
Exhaust pipes belching black rubbish out of it. Yeah. Sticking with cars, let's go on to the Motability Scheme, Car Scheme for Disabled People. Obviously, there's a lot of good work. And the House of Commons Work and Pensions Committee saying that the salary for the boss of the firm that runs that scheme is, in quotes, totally unacceptable. He's called Mike Betts and he's being paid £1.7 million. Does that seem too high to you, Helen?
I think it does if you look at some of the other details of this, because the Treasury and Worker Pensions Committees in Parliament have found that Motability's got £2.4 billion just set aside. So they've got all of that cash. You know, I can see they claim they've got it to pay the chief executive, but you know, why should they have it all in the first place?
No.
Seems very odd.
It does, and you kind of feel, I mean, it's a very important scheme, but you kind of feel that to run that scheme, it can't be that technical. Does he really need to spend £1.7 million to find someone to run that scheme? And he's had such massive pay increases as well.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see this. You know, it was 950,000 in 2008, so that's 10 years on, and it's now 1.7 million. That's almost doubled, basically, in 10 years. I mean, and what's changed in 10 years? I mean, I'm pretty sure that the way you operate a scheme for disabled people, it's either working or it isn't, and you know, hopefully, presumably, it is working. But yes, why you'd you know, expect to double your salary in 10 years, I'm not quite sure.
And yeah, Helen, I'm sure we can both say we are both capitalists,
yes,
and we think markets are a good thing. They do a lot of good work. But one of the things that makes the man or woman on the street angry about capitalism and object to capitalism is when they see bosses of companies, private or public, putting their hand in the till and paying themselves ridiculous amounts of money. And it really is depressing for how it sort of affects public opinion.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, we think great footballers should get paid a lot of money. You know, I think that, you know, I think, as you say, capitalism says that, you know, we're happy that people doing a good job get rewarded, but it does have to be competitive. I mean, they will say, as they have, the company, well, you know, we've got to keep up in line with the pay of other kinds of business, or we won't get the best people. I just think that that would ring more true if the chief executive changed. It's been the same person for 10 years. I'm pretty sure there'll be somebody two or three rungs below him who thinks, hang on a minute, why don't you give me a go?
Yeah.
And they probably know the business and probably would be, good at doing it. So you're absolutely right. It's very actually frustrating for capitalists when we see these kinds of stories.
And also, I have a friend, an old friend, who has done far better in his career than me, and he is the CEO of quite a well-known company, and he's paid a lot of money, and he does work very hard. But you know what? He loves his job. He absolutely loves it. And I'm in no doubt he'd do it for half the salary if that was all he could get. So there you go.
Exactly. That's the other question, isn't it? Yeah, what's the money getting you? Is it, do they need it? Do they want it? What else are they getting out of it? Could someone else do it just as well? You know, you're rejigging these things up. And when it's public money, I think, you know, it's not... Why are we comparing it to private sector salaries?
No, that's a good point, Helen. No, it's a good point. It's a very good point.
Is a public business getting money off the government for a very good scheme? I mean, perhaps arguably some might say, oh, does it need to be run in the private sector at all? And that sort of then you get into a bit of a pickle and perhaps the capitalist view struggles then. A bit like people calling for nationalisation of the railway.
Well,
it effectively has been nationalised after...
Yeah.
Debacle on East Coast.
Indeed. So. Just quickly, Helen, let's do the last story. Mobile apps for banking. Apparently, in 2019, more people will be banking using a mobile app than going on an old-fashioned desktop and doing your banking on a desktop. Do you use, do you do mobile banking, Helen?
I do, and I have to say that I was very sceptical about the app I started, but it's been very, very useful and works pretty well, actually. Well, my bank does anyway. I mean, we talk every week about about TSB, don't we?
We do, yes.
And the struggles they've had. So it doesn't always work.
No, I mean, it's funny. So for me, I've been online banking for a long, long time, but I haven't made that jump onto mobile, and I don't really feel the need to do it.
Because
I sit in front of a desktop every day, so it's not that difficult for me to do my banking from that. But you find it useful nonetheless?
Well, I think, as you say, it's a change in circumstance, because I used to be like that when I was in front of a desk all day long, but now I run my own business, and I'm here, there and everywhere, and my phone is my phone. You know, you see the rise of sort of co-working spaces and hot desks and all the rest of it. Perhaps it is tougher for people to be in front of desktop systems. The most amazing ones, and now I haven't tried this thing where you can sort of if you've got dinner and you're splitting the bill with your friend, you can kind of zap on your phone to immediately repay them or something with their phone number. I mean, I'm making myself sound very old here, but I don't understand how it works.
Yes, I thought phones were just for having conversations. What's all this business about paying bills? Anyway, Helen, thank you. Always a big, big pleasure to speak to you. That was Helen Thomas from the Blonde Money website, which I would also recommend. In just a minute, we are going to come back to what is still the biggest story of the day, the wedding between Meghan and Harry. And I'm going to be getting the take of James Brooks from the Royal Central website. I spoke to him last week a couple of times in the build-up. I know he was going to be very, very, very busy on Saturday. So I want to find out if he enjoyed the day when it actually happened. So stay with us here on Love Sport.
I have to tell you, LBC presenters, losers, oxygen thieves. Really, I guarantee it.
Love Sport.
Don't miss big at the London Motor Show. Brought to you by motorshowevents.com. This is a celebration of all big vehicles. From big American rigs, the ultimate six-wheel Hummer, one of the biggest off-roaders, to the most spectacular lowrider by Gas Monkey, this is not to be missed. Save 10% today on London Motor Show tickets. Visit motorshowevents.com/lovesport and use promo code BIG2018. The London Motor Show, 17th to the 20th of May at XL London.
Stop paying too much for your energy bills. Brian saved money on his at aspokesmansaid.com. Can you?
I'm Brian from Swadling Coat, South Derbyshire, and I saved about £400 on my energy bill with a Spokesman Said. The iSpokesman Said website was very easy to use, instructions are quite clear to follow, and the money I saved I put towards a holiday.
aspokesmansaid.com. Compare home energy quotes from the UK's biggest suppliers in just a matter of minutes. To find real people, real savings. Compare, switch and save with aspokesmansaid.com. Fighting for you, saving you money.
Digital radio offers great sound quality and more stations than ever before. And we want to make sure that you get Love Sport on your digital radio. Just press the auto tune or auto scan button and Love Sport will appear on your menu. Love Sport on digital radio. A great station for a great city. If you're in business, I bet you hate wasting money. We Do Taxi Tops can help you achieve minimum wastage on your advertising costs and maximum exposure. Our revolutionary Taxi Tops can target your potential customers in the right place at the right time, so your message has the greatest potential for making an impact. We Do Taxi Tops. Visit WEDOOH.com. We Do. The smarter, quicker way of advertising in London, supporting London businesses of all sizes.
People are telling me buses are the thing in London. Buses, tremendous.
Love Sport, 5:58 a.m.
Hello, this is Ed Bowsher here on Love Sport. We are now going to talk the royal wedding once again. This is such a big story. And I'm now going to speak to James Brooks from the Royal Central website. Good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon, Ed.
Thanks for joining us again. I spoke to you last week a couple of times. You were very, very busy. How was the day itself? Were you even more crazily busy?
Absolutely, yes, I was.
Where were you?
A jam-packed day. So I was commentating for America TV.
Oh, wow.
Day. So we were actually above the proceedings, so to speak. So you've probably seen the images in papers and online of the huge scaffolding that the US networks had kind of built on top of these kind of hotels and houses. And they built a whole set for their shows. So we were up there looking down toward the castle above the high street. So we got a good view of the carriage as it came out, which was quite nice. But yeah, absolutely packed. Huge crowds along the long walk and along the high street. And the weather was fab for us. So, yeah, I think on the whole, the wedding went off quite well and
so which,
without a hitch.
Which American network were you working for?
So I was with MSNBC on the day.
Wow.
And throughout the week, we've done bits and bobs for the likes of CNN. Yeah, the media interest for this wedding has been huge.
So you must be a star now. So you walk down the streets in London, nobody knows who you are, but down the middle of New York, you'll be a major celebrity. How exciting.
Who knows? There'll be billboards, I'm sure.
I'm sure. And people will be throwing themselves down to you prostrate and asking to be the great love of your life. Who knows? So looking back at the wedding, it obviously was a lovely day. It went very well. Was there a particular bit that was a highlight for you?
I think the service itself was very poignant, and it had quite a few different poignant moments in there. Obviously, the dress was the major moment as she Meghan got out of the car, and everybody wasn't expecting Givenchy to be the front runner for the designer.
No.
So that was a little bit of a surprise, I think, on the morning. But generally, the emotion that the service had in it, both quite happy from a way, and also you could see that Harry and Meghan were quite intensely involved with the ceremony. So we saw as Meghan was walking down and as they were exchanging their vows later on, they were giving each other so much eye contact, and usually at royal weddings you don't necessarily seem to see it as much as that. You get the odd glimpse here and there, but these two were really really involved with that part of the ceremony, and you could see Meghan's face light up quite a lot throughout there. And then also the sermon, the address that everybody has been speaking about, and that kind of just set social media on fire. We were watching on a monitor and we were scrolling through Twitter, and people saying that even if they weren't interested in monarchy or royals or even religion, they were just transfixed by this bishop, Michael Curry, giving the service something that we've never seen before at a royal wedding, and the messages behind it naturally very, very poignant for the day. But it just gave the royals something to smile about as well. We saw the Duchess of Cambridge chuckling along. We saw William trying to stifle a laugh. Prince Philip, we didn't know whether he enjoyed the service or not. He looked a bit concerned to begin with, but he was still very interested.
James.
And I think it just shows a personal stamp on the service.
Did you see, James, there's an article in this morning's Daily Mail by Quentin Letts where he's putting the boot in to the Most Reverend Michael Curry, calling him a shouty American preacher who should have put a sock in it. I think he's misjudged the mood of the times, really, hasn't he? Did you see the piece?
Well, yeah, I've not seen the piece, but I've heard various people arguing on that point. A lot of people saying he did go on for a bit, and yeah, you could say that it was a longer address than usual, but I think it just reflects the way that Harry and Meghan wanted their wedding to be. We
yeah.
always knew that this wedding was going to be different, naturally because of Meghan's American heritage, but also because Harry is not in the same position as his brother. He's further down the line of succession. He's
yeah.
not going to be king.
Yeah.
He's got a little bit more freedom to play with it, and so that's what we saw throughout the day as a whole.
Now, I also, you mentioned you saw some happy faces in the royal family. Some publications saying that the royal family loves them. Did you see any evidence to support that hypothesis?
I think there were a few awkward moments. They were talking about sex and family and those kind of moments and love. And it's a very kind of British stiff upper lip type thing. We quite like to be sure that particularly these events are prim and proper sometimes. But I think on the whole, the royal family, I think, will have enjoyed and been very interested to see what the bishop had to say. And I can't think that there'll be too many kind of scowling faces. Yes, there might have been a bit of confusion to begin with, just because they didn't know what to expect. But I think now that they'll have had time to reflect on it, and they know that Harry and Meghan have personally chosen it, and that's what they want to kind of modernise and go with the time. So, yeah, I think that's a well
well thought out plan.
Actually, one highlight for me was the cello playing by Sheku Kanne Mason, brilliant cellist and lovely piece of music. I really, really enjoyed that. And I saw the cameras turning to Charles and Camilla during that. Charles and Camilla were chatting through it. And, you know, you think of Charles and Camilla being the staid sort of old fuddy-duddy part of the royal family. Well, they're the old fuddy-duddies, but they still don't realise that you're not supposed to talk when a cellist is playing some pretty good music. So that was one disappointment for me. I don't know whether you noticed that, James.
I think there were moments where we had it quite a while back, actually, when they were at the Commonwealth Games, and a few people criticised Camilla for thumbing through the programme at certain points, saying, oh, is she bored? Is the camera work sometimes? Unfortunately, they are caught off guard when they don't necessarily want to
be.
Yeah,
but they just shouldn't. If they didn't talk during the music, they wouldn't be caught off guard. I think it just, for me, it supports the view. And I'm a big monarchist, I should add. A big, big monarchist. But it supports the view that you sometimes see that Prince Charles is a little arrogant and not really doesn't quite. He just sees the whole world from the perspective of Prince Charles, and he doesn't think about how his actions could be affecting other people. But I shouldn't go on too much down that route today, because it's still a happy day after the wedding. And you never know. You never know. Meghan and Harry might be listening as we speak, and I wouldn't want them to hear anything unpleasant or unkind. James, could you just stick with us for about 30 seconds? I just want to chat a bit more to you about the wedding, and particularly about Meghan's mother, who came across so well as well, here on Love Sport.
I hear Jamie Oliver is still being chased by people who hate the sugar tax.
Love Sport.
I work for a spokesman said.com. We can help you save money on your home insurance. All you need to do is visit a spokesman said.com and find out if we can find you a better deal.
West Ham, Charlton, Spurs, QPR, Arsenal, Fulham, Crystal Palace, Brentford, Chelsea, Millwall, Watford, AFC Wimbledon, non-league. Whichever is your team, we've got it covered. The Fan Show, back tomorrow night from 7 with 7otb.com on Love Sport.
Adam Mohamed Salah, seriously.
This is Love Sport.
Hi, this is Ed Bauscher on talking about the Meghan and Harry wedding, and I am chatting to a star of US TV. He's appeared on Fox News, MSNBC, and many other fine networks. His name is James Brooks from the Royal Central website. James, I would like to talk to you about Doria Ragland, who, of course, is Meghan Markle's mother. I think she was sort of the surprise star of the event. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, we saw her sat alone in the chapel. It must have been a very daunting experience for her, having come across on the Wednesday and met with all the royal family, and then being thrust into this kind of media spotlight straight away. But we saw her throughout the service tearing up, also nodding quite a lot while the bishop was going on with his address. So I wouldn't be surprised if Meghan's had a chat with her mum before making that decision about to invite the bishop. And I think she was very kind of engaged with the service and the day as a whole. And I think the one photo that seems to have gone down well with the papers and online especially is the one of her walking out of the chapel with Prince Charles and Camilla. And Charles has allowed Doria to take his arm as they walk down the steps, which just shows that the royal family are trying their best to welcome Doria into the fold as well, because they know that she plays an important part in Meghan's life.
No, I do agree with you, James, and I think Prince Charles, I was criticising him a minute ago, but Prince Charles got that one 100% right. Excellent photo, as you said, and it reflects well on the royal family. They played that one very, very well. Do you think this event overall has boosted the royal family then here in the UK? They got it right enough, might be able to boost support a little perhaps for the monarchy here.
I think it will have had a relatively good reaction, judging by the reaction online and in the papers. I mean, most of the papers, I think, you know, if not all of them, carried the wedding as their front page the day after, and also on Sunday. So it was one of those things where you're always going to get people who don't like the monarchy and don't agree with it. It's not going to be a full 100% agree. And so those people will likely not have tuned in for the royal wedding and will probably criticise the broadcasters for the coverage they gave. But I think on the whole, the wedding went down well. It gave a good impression of the country, I think. the amount of crowds that turned out for it, we were a little bit anxious to begin with in the morning because they didn't really turn up until around 10, half 10 in their droves. So we thought, well, actually, have they overestimated this? Have they thought that the media attention and the crowd attention might be a little bit less than they thought? But actually, no. Thousands turned out, thousands camped overnight, some for days before just to get their spot. So I think Windsor will have done quite well, no doubt, now the castle already being a tourist attraction, but it'll have done well for the town. And I think the monarchy has a good PR exercise in that wedding as well. The modernised version of it that Harry and Meghan want to carry through definitely came through on the day.
I did, though, see that apparently some early TV ratings figures showing that fewer people watched the Prince Harry wedding than the Prince William wedding back in 2011. And it's quite a big fall, actually, in audience between the two weddings. So perhaps we shouldn't overestimate the popularity of this event here. And I should also say, here in the Love Sport office, there are people who really aren't that bothered in the slightest. So, you know, it's not sort of delirium across the whole of the British nation here.
Not at all, and I think that will be the same regardless of what, regardless of what royal event it is, whether it's big or small, you'll always have those that don't tune in. I think the difference with Harry's wedding is, A, it was on a weekend, so we didn't get a bank holiday for it, so there's no reason to kind of have to tune in. You sometimes feel, oh, well, I've got a bank holiday, let's see what it's all about. Yes. The difference also is that, again, in terms of spectacle, it did have the pomp and ceremony, but it wasn't as big logistically as William and Kate's wedding. And because we've already seen William and Kate's wedding, we kind of know what to expect. I think a lot of people tuned into that wedding because they didn't know what to expect, and they wanted to see the dress. The press attention around where she was then, Kate Middleton, was huge, and they wanted to see the full first daughter of first son of Princess Diana and Charles get married. And I think with Harry, although the media attention was there, I think a lot of people thought, well, it's just another royal wedding.
Fair enough. Well, thank you very much for joining us again, James. Real pleasure to speak to you. That's James Brooks from the Royal Central website. So my show is almost over. Kevin O'Sullivan will be on at 1. I'm sure there'll be more chat about the royal wedding in his show. And also looking at this story, this bizarre story about the Tory party, which is apparently planning to offer a discount card to potential Tory members to try and get them to sign up for the Conservative Party. I must say, I'm no Tory, but I kind of do hope the Tories have some success on this, because I'm anti-Tory, but I'm even more anti-Corbyn, and I recognise the only way to stop Jeremy Corbyn becoming Prime Minister is to have an election where the Tories do well. So, against my better judgement, I hope the Tories get it right and do manage to boost their membership numbers. I'll be back on Love Sport tomorrow morning at 10. Kelvin McKenzie, of course, in the driving seat for the first hour. I'm sure he'll have plenty of strong opinions. This morning he was arguing that we should be clamping down, fighting back on Iran really hard, taking military action against Iran. There'll be more strong views tomorrow, and then I'll take over at 11 a.m, slightly gentler, but with still some strong opinions along the way. This is Love Sport.
The dishonest media is about to give you some news, so long as it's not fake news and you're making me in a positive light, that I can tell you.
Love Sport.
When looking for the best possible deal for his car insurance, Jim went on thespokesmansaid.com and saved hundreds.
I'm Jim. I'm a radio presenter based in Glasgow. I couldn't believe how expensive the car insurance for our Citroen C4 Picasso was going to be from my existing insurer. I went on A Spokesman Said and saved an incredible £600. Just amazing. Signing up to A Spokesman Said, best thing I could have done.
Find quotes from over 100 leading insurance providers at aspokesmansaid.com. Getting real people, real savings. Compare, switch and save with aspokesmansaid.com.
Who's going to win the World Cup? Not Italy, that's for sure. Who do you fancy? England? The Germans? 7BestBets offer great welcome deals for new customers. Whether you think you know this summer's big winners, or you want a spin at the roulette table, or you fancy a flutter on the GGs, 7BestBets have got you covered. Enjoy your World Cup with us. 7BestBets.com. Please gamble responsibly. Visit GamblerWare for details.
You could visit 10, 20, 100 dealers and still not see as many cars as you would in just one visit to Car Giant. Because at Car Giant, we've up to 8,000 quality used cars in stock, all at unbelievably low prices. So don't go round the houses for your next car. Go to Car Giant, the only place for giant choice and giant savings.
It's how London buys its cars. Car Giant.
Love Sport Breakfast with Ian Stone. The perfect comedy breakfast sandwich. Bringing home the bacon with all the sports, the biggest news and a fair amount of egg on faces. You like it saucy? There'll be something for you. Love Sport Breakfast with Ian Stone. Weekdays from 6am on Love Sport.
Hello, I'm Kevin O'Sullivan. What a weekend, a royal wedding weekend. I can't deny I've got a bit of a hangover. I'm sure a lot of people have as well. But what a ceremony. What a dazzling spectacle. But the big star of the show was obviously Meghan's magnificent gown. And right after the news, I'll be joined by Princess Diana's favourite dress designer, Jacques Azzaguri, who will assess Meghan's outfit and some of the fashion heroes and zeros on that special day. So stay tuned for our Royal Wedding Tastic special show. 3 hours of thrilling radio. I'm Kevin O'Sullivan and this is Love Sport.